Welcome back to another episode of the Pax What She Said podcast. I'm one of your co-hosts, Maggie Loney, not joined by Perry Goldstein this week. No, this is not an episode of the Pack-A-Day podcast. I am here with the draft fellows, Andrew Mertig and Kyle Fellows, making his debut on Pax What She Said. Thank you guys so much for joining me.
We're so happy to be here. We stopped Pack-A-Day as the regular Friday crew like 4 days ago. So we've already missed each other so much that we had to get back together.
Exactly true. And I will say, I feel like the Draft Fellows has a really nice show intro, good music, but man, that was some good stuff that you guys start your show with. So I'm having a little bit of show intro envy right now, but really excited to be on Pax What She Said for the first time. This is a good time.
The secret is to use Aaron Nagler and Tyler Herrick and not do any of it yourself. That's why it looks as good as it does, because I've tried to do it and it doesn't look good when I do it. So at least yours is originally you. But Kyle, you were at the draft for starters. Andrew and I got to talk about night one, obviously, for Pack-A-Day. Talk about the wide receiver pick and talk about what it was like to what we assume it was like to be in Green Bay to hear that announcement and the atmosphere. And I know you didn't go to the draft on night one, but what was the environment like of the weekend? 600,000 people in a weekend for a city that has 100,000 people normally.
So fun. Like just an incredible weekend. And I know that I'm biased because I'm a Packers fan, but I've been to the draft in Kansas City and I've gone to the one in Detroit last year. And I mean, I just don't know. I know people will argue about it and Detroit fans are already bitter because they're like defending that theirs was the best, like whatever. But like the Green Bay experience was phenomenal. And I really think that like they did a really nice job with the setup and like they actually like did some interesting things with where the gates were placed so that it like forced you to like kind of take in the entire experience. We were kind of confused at first where like why you couldn't get to Lambeau like kind of out of the gate, but they intentionally made you go through the experience and do all like the fun, like, you know, run the 40, like try to kick the field goal, all that stuff. Whereas like in Kansas City, it was really easy to miss that stuff. So even just from like a infrastructure organization standpoint, Green Bay did it really well. And then Lambeau being there was so cool. Like nothing else. You didn't get to do any of that in Detroit or Kansas City. You got to walk through the concourse. You got to walk out, like not onto the field, but like right up to, you know, the wall there, right at the edge of the field. And just like that was so special. And for someone who's even been there before, but I can just imagine for like a visitor to come in and see Lambeau and feel the history. And then just like the party outside that's like associated with it as well. Just an incredible, incredible environment that I think the NFL is going to have a hard time competing with what they put out there this year. And that's a credit to the Packers and Mark Murphy.
Yeah, Andrew and I talked about it a little bit on Pack-A-Day on Thursday night. Just that this hopefully becomes like a reward for the small markets that are never going to be able to host the Super Bowl. Obviously today the news dropped that Washington is building a brand new stadium and Roger Goodell kind of hinted at that probably puts them in the conversation now to be able to host a Super Bowl in, you know, a couple of years, whenever that stadium is built. I think they said 2030 would probably be the first year it's open, but Detroit, Buffalo, some of these small markets that have a lot of rich football history, even honestly Soldier Field before it gets demoed and the Bears move, like these are places that if you love football and you love the game, you want to visit. So hopefully the Packers, you know, put on enough of a show and impressed, which it seems like they did to be able to do it again, because I would like to go personally in the next time they do it.
Absolutely. I think it was one of those things like being there. I wasn't, like you said, on there on Friday or on Thursday night rather, but on Friday, just the energy of the fans was so fun. And like just the anticipation was there. And I just think that they did such a nice job of gathering the fans, regardless of whether you're a Packer fan or not, and just presenting something that everybody wanted to be a part of, not just from a Packers perspective, but an NFL history perspective. And then the Thursday night energy of that pick, like not being there, and I know it wasn't the same as being there, but you could feel it on TV. And like, that was so fun just to oh crap, I could have been there. Like we could have gone. We love to like watch it on TV because you don't always get to see The details of the trade go down, right? Like when a team trades up, you don't always get to see those things behind the scenes if you're there in person. So we like to kind of be the nerds who like watch it on TV so we can track those things and stuff. But that golden pick, when that came up and like the crowd goes nuts and like I heard for the first time in 20 years, like statement from Mark Murphy and just like the eruption, like even before the pick was announced, was just a special, special thing. I know they didn't pick a wide receiver for this weekend to make that drama, but like, good golly, what a way for the Packers to really do it on draft weekend.
Yeah. Andrew, anything that you want to add? Sorry. I feel like this,
No, I'm just listening in. This is cool. Cause Kyle and I haven't had a chance to talk about it. And like, it's an amazing thing for the community, but I feel like it's also an amazing thing that the community did for the Packers organization and really like the NFL as a whole. So to show that, yes, we do have the infrastructure in Northeast Wisconsin to be able to handle an event of this magnitude. I think the attendance would have been even better had it not been cold and rainy on Friday night. And I think like, they're maybe not even including everybody that sort of participated, right? You think about all the bars that are around, maybe people that didn't make their way up to the draft experience, people that went through during the day, you know, certainly people that were in the surrounding areas because of it. And so like, it's so awesome to me that it went really, really well, because it does leave open the potential for other events in the future.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that's, you know, that's the perfect send off for Mark Murphy, right? To get up there and announce a wide receiver pick. And it's something he's been building for 10 years and finally comes to fruition. And now he gets to kind of pass the baton to the next president. And, you know, he really has left an impact with the legacy that he's built. So let's talk about these guys, right, that were drafted. 8 picks. I don't know about you guys. I was kind of surprised that they stuck right at 8. I kept feeling like they were going to trade for more. I know Goody mentioned in kind of his post-draft presser that they had tried a couple times. They thought about moving, whether to get picks in the later rounds of this year's draft or to even collect picks for next year, but the boards and the phone calls just didn't fall that way. So they stuck and picked all 8 of their selections. I think people are familiar with them, but running through them very quickly here, obviously night 1 was wide receiver Matthew Golden. Night 2 was Anthony Belton, the tackle slash guard, and Savion Williams, the wide receiver. And then day 3 was really all about the defense, except for that 7th rounder, John Williams, but Baron Sorrell, the defensive lineman, Colin Oliver, the edge rusher, and then Warren Brinson, the defensive lineman, and Micah Robinson, the corner, who friend of the show Tom Gracia to announce, which was very cool to see on TV. But before we dive into these guys, did either of you have like a favorite pick, a surprise pick? Because I know personally for me, I didn't expect them to go offense with their first 3 selections in this draft.
I want Andrew to go first because we haven't gotten to talk about this. And I want to know what you think.
All right. So I don't know. It's interesting. Like my scouting process was very strange this year. I normally start in December, January, and I use other people's lists to start building my own, because you have to start somewhere, right? This year, we started in like August, September. And so as a result, I hit my like 150, 160 players pretty early. And so there were a lot of players late in the process that rose that I didn't get to. And that's all the Packers did on day 3.
Yeah.
It was pick players that I had not watched. Everything I know about these players, and I actually am excited, really excited about 2 of those selections. I know from other people. I have seen clips, but not had the deep tape dive to really make a like thorough analysis. Yeah, I guess I'll cheat and I'll go off of 2 players I didn't watch, but 2 players I'm really excited about, and that is Baron Sorrell and Colin Oliver, and for very different reasons. I think Sorrell, and like if you watched the YouTube video that Andy and Justice Mosqueda did on Monday, Justice is real excited about Sorrell. And I don't know if I'm there, but like it's awesome to hear the athletic thresholds and kind of the elite package and the mix of skill sets that he brings that is highly unique in the NFL and typically very successful. So I won't blow that show, but like that is like some high praise coming from Justice. And so the potential of having a developmental edge rusher like that, and obviously the story is phenomenal, and like will pull at your heartstrings. And so that is such a cool pick, somebody that you can very easily root for. And I think right away comes into competition for edge four at least, and is really going to push some of those players on the team. And then Colin Oliver, I got really excited about because like, that's a player you would never, ever have on your board if you're scouting mm-hmm. Packers specific players. Mm-hmm. And because they don't go outside of their thresholds that much. And so I'm excited to see that they're willing to do some different things. And I hope that means that Jeff Hafley is thinking of a creative package to use a small edge rusher who is so explosive to the ball. He's going to be a nightmare specialist. Like he's probably not going to play more than maybe 10 snaps on defense, but I think he can be a good special teams player. I think he's going to be a guy that you can throw in there on third down and make some offensive tackles' life a nightmare because he's so quick. He's so hard to get your hands on because he's shorter and compact. And I think that is a really special thing. So I love those two edge rushers.
Yeah. So Baron Sorrell is the player that kind of like, day two was kind of rough for me with what I expected with what the Packers did. And there's a lot of things in hindsight that I'm like, okay, I've bought in now and I see the vision for what they were doing on day two. But the Baron Sorrell pick in the fourth round was kind of the one that kind of got me back on the road of like just really seeing what they got there for the value, thinking he was a player that, like Andrew, I didn't watch early on. He was kind of in my like last 10 days before the draft, like, okay, who are the players that are getting a lot of buzz that I haven't seen yet? And he was one I got to, and he was a guy that was like, yeah, third or fourth round, I feel like that's a really interesting ad. So I was excited to hear his name called. And then Dane Brugler just did a clip, I think it's going around Twitter right now, where he says that Sorrell is the player that when you interview other guys from Texas, that they all said that they wanted to take with them to mm-hmm. their next NFL, you know, destination. So I think that speaks to the character and the player and, you know, his work ethic and all those kinds of things. So I think the Packers got a good player and a good person, of course, there as well. So really exciting for me, Matthew Golden. And I know not everybody loved Matthew Golden. I think the majority of fans just got on board because it's a wide receiver. But I love Matthew Golden, and I kind of joked that like the Packers haven't picked a player that I like loved in the first round since really Kenny Clark and kind of Jair Alexander. I love Jair, but I never thought that the Packers would actually pick him, so I kind of set that aside as a possibility that year. But man, Matthew Golden is just a player that I felt like had, you know, the ability to separate the route running, the speed, but also the ability at the catch point and the hands to really be a player. There's no doubt that Matthew Golden is not a finished product, but he has, I think, a ceiling that the Packers absolutely fell in love with to potentially be a number one wide receiver. And so for me, when I heard that selection, we were staying in an Airbnb. I was like, I think I woke up the entire town of Winneconne, like yelling about that pick. So it was a good time, and one that I'm just really excited to watch hit the field this fall and see what he can do.
Yeah, the first three rounds, obviously we do our on the clock show for Pack a Day. We went Derek Harmon, I think it was Darian Porter Jr., and then Femi Oladejo. So we clearly thought like it was defense all the way. All the mocks that were happening, whether it was, I think Peter Schrager was the only one who had Matthew Golden as the selection there, but everyone else was targeting defense, which is what we kind of expected. So made it a really surprising and fun night. But yeah, if you're a Packers fan and you haven't seen the Baron Sorrell clips of him actually getting to be at Lambeau, happening to, you know, opt into going back to the green room for day three, Roger Goodell telling him, hey, when you get picked, I will make the pick for you. So you have that moment on stage. Everything about his process, and to your point, Kyle, too, the Dane Brugler thing. I think Matt LaFleur brought it up too in the postgame presser that he said, you know, when they're grilling these guys in their top 30 visits, they're asking everyone from Texas, who are you bringing to your new franchise? And yeah, everybody said Sorrell. So that was really cool. Milt Hendricks had said he's one of those guys that as long as he wants to play, if he stays healthy, he probably is going to play. So And Andrew, to your point too, that's the pick, you know, the Justice article for Acme Packing that I was hoping we would talk about on this show, because he's got some really fun mock draftable comps. If you look at players who have his height, weight, 40 speed, and 3-cone bend, the comps are Trevon Walker, Lucas Van Ness, Montez Sweat, Adafi Owe, Danielle Hunter, and Trey Hendrickson. That's it. And that is a pretty phenomenal group to be included in. So not to put too much pressure on these guys before they come into the NFL, of course, but it's certainly a lot of traits to like. And Colin Oliver has almost identical measurements to Donovan Ezeraku. So I'm very excited to see a small speed rusher here, like you said, in some packages, knowing that it breaks the mold of what we expect from the Packers and their quote unquote thresholds that I think we're about ready to be done with in the Goody era.
So can I throw out like some thoughts here with the first round? Mark Murphy was a gem this weekend, and obviously for all the reasons, like just a perfect way for him to go out. I'm so glad he got to announce the pick the way that he did. And I mean, I felt like he was honored in a way that does him justice with sometimes he didn't always get that, you know, respect, but I feel like he absolutely deserved it for what he did for Green Bay. But listening to him and doing some of like the interviews, he left some nuggets out there that like I feel like kind of got set aside. But he talked about how he actually, before he went out to announce the pick, he left the room about 5 picks before Green Bay was on the clock, he said. And he kind of mentioned like, hey, there was a group of names and Matthew Golden was towards the top of that list, but there were some other names, you know. Mark always gives just maybe a little bit more than maybe he should. And so like he basically said, like when he left the room, Golden wasn't at the top of the list. It's like essentially what you read in there. And like we know, like Shamar Stewart went 17. We know that Derek Harmon went at 20, right? I believe
21.
And then Emeka Buka went 19 as well. And we don't know the board, but like we kind of know generally the positions and generally what Green Bay looks for. He also did say he was really worried about having to say a difficult name. And when he looked down and saw Matthew Golden, that like he was like, oh yeah, I got this kind of thing. That's straightforward. But obviously, like a player like Derek Harmon's not easy to say, hard to say, you know. Shamar Stewart's not incredibly hard to say, but I kind of wonder if he thought, if it was a wide receiver, if maybe he'd be saying Emeka Buka, and that was something that he was worried about. Like obviously we don't know any of those things, but when Mark Murphy gives you like the tea leaves and you like start thinking through it, you're like, what a fascinating peek behind the curtain of like, there's a lot of players on the board, and like I really don't think that the Packers set out to like, hey, we've got to have a wide receiver here, it's got to be Matthew Golden. I really do think they just stuck to their board and he was the best player available. But just so interesting to kind of see what can happen over the course of a couple picks that now has set in motion what is a pick that like most of Green Bay fandom is just ecstatic about. I just think it's so interesting.
Yeah, when they got to 22, I had said as much because people were asking me, who do you think they're going to take? And I was like, well, I hope it's Will Johnson or a trade down, but yeah. I think it's Matthew Golden. And like when you look back at the board, and it's interesting, take a look at the rest of the first round. I don't think there was anybody else that got picked from 24 to 32 that the Packers would have been interested in. Mm-hmm. So like it in retrospect, at least, it seems pretty obvious. If Will Johnson was off the board because of medicals, then Matthew Golden was the guy. And I think that was probably a tear breaker for them. So even if there was a trade offer, I don't think they would have traded down, because I think Golden's probably the last of that bucket of players that they might have had a first round grade on. And so, you know, I was not as high on Matthew Golden as most, but I really do understand and appreciate the pick. And, you know, I think it's going to be exciting. I don't know what's going to happen. We don't, but like really nobody does, but it's going to be fascinating to see what they can do with a player with that kind of athleticism.
Yeah. And I mean, if you look at, you know, 25 obviously was a trade, Houston to the Giants, for a quarterback. The Falcons made kind of that splashy trade to go get James Pierce Jr., trading with the Rams, who were pretty ecstatic by that phone call, it sounded like, to make that trade. So I agree that, you know, the opportunity was there for the Packers had they wanted to. And I think Golden was probably their final, like you said, grade in the first round, that they were like, you know what, we really just need to stick and pick here. So knowing what we know, obviously their 8 picks, we see their undrafted free agents that they signed, their rookie mini camps, their invites coming out for kind of those tryouts. Was there like a big shock for you when it came to a position you thought they'd address further? I know corner is kind of at the top of everybody's list. Andrew, you mentioned Will Johnson. We were in love with Darian Porter Jr. in our on the clock mock for Pack-A-Day. Certainly a ton of corners that we like Benjamin Morrison available, kind of going into round two. Do you think it means anything with Jair Alexander or kind of what direction did you see this draft going in? Because it certainly didn't shake out the way that I thought it would.
Yeah, I mean, I think the bridge is probably burned with Jair. There's optimism that maybe he's forced to play, or maybe the Packers find a way to make that work. I just think that the Green Bay organization feels like they're in a better place at cornerback than the perception is. Mm-hmm. And whether or not they're right, I don't know. They've been wrong before, and they've proven us wrong before. So that it's kind of scary, because that's a position that can be kind of difficult. I will say this. It appeared that the league either didn't like this cornerback class very much, or there's a value perception change in the cornerback position, because I was live with Andy all of Friday night, mm-hmm. and we got deep into Friday night. I want to say we were like well into the third round, and there still really had only been like 5-6, if you count Travis Hunter, cornerbacks selected. So the league didn't see the value here very much, and I think the injuries at the top really hurt, like Will Johnson, Savon Revel, Benjamin Morrison, all having injury questions. But in addition, I don't think Trey Amos slid a lot further than we would have thought, and a lot of other players. So I don't know that the league saw the value in the corners this year either.
I mentioned that like Anthony Belton wasn't my favorite pick, but honestly, that was just in reaction to what I assumed was like a good corner board holding up really well. Mm-hmm. And like the Packers not needing to trade up for that. And just thinking like they get their choice of like two or three guys here that like, I'm like, of course it's going to be one of these guys. And they read Anthony Belton. I was like, how? Like, I mean, we just all thought it was going to be a corner for sure. Whether that was, I believe like Revel and Amos were still on the board at that point. I think Morrison had already gone, but there were guys that like, I was just like, for sure, it's going to be a corner. So, and then in hindsight, you know, you kind of process what they're thinking with the Anthony Belton pick, and it makes a lot more sense if he's the future at right guard. Like you get more excited about that than maybe like kind of a longer shot to pan out at tackle. So I can get on board with that. But for me, and I just can't shake it, it's keeping me up at night, but I like feel like in the third round, like I just believe that they were going to pick Noel Williams out of Cal at 87. And maybe that's because like I'm a fan, maybe he wasn't their guy at all, but Matt LaFleur and I think Gutekunst as well have both said like, we weren't going to pick another wide receiver, but the board just fell that way. And Kansas City traded up to 85 right in front of 87 for the Packers. And it was Noel Williams. And then after that, like I can see it. Like when I looked at the board, I'm like, I don't know who the next guy is. Like he was kind of the end of that. So like, I do wonder if they got jumped there and that was their last one where they like felt like, okay, this guy is an improvement or has a chance to be an improvement over what we have on the roster. But with you guys, like, I just did not think that the seventh round was going to be where we got a corner. And maybe to Andrew's point, maybe this draft class of corners just wasn't, maybe we inflated it a little bit, especially as Packer fans who knew that we needed to add to the corner room at some point.
Yeah. I mean, I think Gutekunst is always keeping his cards close to his chest, right? But he made comments at the combine and all throughout the process that, you know, they feel they need more production out of their edge and their D-line, but they really liked their room, right? They weren't interested in bringing in wide receiver competition, but if it fell that way, they were going to do it. So, you know, their investment in Nate Hobbs at the cornerback position. So I agree with you though, Kyle. Like when you're watching it happen live, the second round, it was like Nick Scorton, Femi Oladejo, and then Benjamin Morrison back to back to back. And it's like, okay, well, there's three guys I thought were going to be Packers that now are sniped. And then you go into the third round, and like you said, they get jumped a little bit for Noel Williams. Jamari Caldwell, I thought, fit kind of that Packers mold. Jacob Parrish went at 84. So it was just like, it was like heartbreak after heartbreak kind of initially, because you just had these expectations or players that you really did like that ended up sliding a little bit. So, go ahead, Andrew.
I was just going to say, to your point, there wasn't a big run on corners in the first two rounds, but then there were six cornerbacks taken in the third before the Packers have been picked. So six out of the first 22. I have a feeling there were probably some names on that list that they liked and they just got sniped. And even after Mark Murphy's statements, they didn't seem like they wanted to move around the board very much, or they weren't able to. Maybe the partner just wasn't there.
Yeah, you do wonder about that. Like, what were the opportunities? Because my critique with in hindsight, I really like this Packers class. I don't know that I love it. I like it a lot. I like the vision for how they, you know, what they ended up doing. Savion Williams is not a pick that I ever would have made, or one that like I ever expected the Packers to make. But like, it's going to be a heck of a lot of fun. Like, that's going to be a lot of fun to watch. And I think Matt LaFleur is the perfect coach to use him. But yeah, like, it's one of those things where you're like, honestly, it kind of feels, and I know that this is a Packers show, but it kind of feels like the Packers killed the first round, in my opinion. They kind of skipped the second round, and then they took a really good third round pick and a really good fourth round pick. And that's kind of the value that I feel like they got. Like, Belton probably wouldn't have been there at 87, but he felt like a reach at 54. And then Savion Williams probably doesn't get to their fourth round pick, but was maybe a little bit of a reach, like where they got him at 87. So I just feel like, man, and it's because like there was a player on it, like on the board, like Ezeraku, where you're like, maybe you could have launched up the board to get another guy like that, but then you don't get that fourth round pick. You don't get that third round pick that you could, you know, could have used in other ways. So it's hard to know what they had the opportunity to do. But for me, it's just that little bit of a value slip maybe in the second round that they didn't take advantage of.
Yeah, so yeah,
Go ahead. I was just going to say, I'll say this about Belton really quick. And I didn't love the Belton pick at the time either. I still don't love it, but I understand it a lot more. And because I had like a third or fourth round grade, much like many people did, and where the consensus board had him. But if you take a look, like that's one of the reasons why I love to like have my horizontal board in front of me when I'm picking. And I said this to Andy after we kind of got over the like, wow, that was a wild pick. I was like, I can't see another tackle here that I would take for two rounds. Mm-hmm. And I can't see another interior offensive lineman that is like a Packers style player for a while. And so I just feel like the board necessitated, okay, this is the player that we value as a potential starter. We need to take him now because he is not going to last, not just to the third round. He's probably not going to last the next 10 picks.
Yeah.
So that's a really good transition, because that's kind of where I wanted to go with this, was the offensive line. And, you know, the Packers always add depth to that room. There's always competition. We saw, of course, last year with Jordan Morgan, and then they took Jacob Monk as a center, and then they took Travis Glover as a tackle. I think what is so interesting about these prospects, one, you know, their size, right? They brought in Aaron Banks in free agency, 6'5", 325. They sign Anthony Belton, 6'6", 335 pounds. Nickname is the like Escalade. He is a smooth, gigantic mover. And then in the seventh round, they get John Williams, 6'4", 322 pounds, plays left tackle. So did Anthony Belton in college. Both guys, they think, can play basically all four spots but center. And Goody even said that Williams probably can play center. He was like an aerospace engineer major, so he's incredibly smart. And but I just think it shows kind of what the Packers felt like they were missing out of their offensive line, right? Because we kind of had the perception like, well, right tackle's locked in. They're probably going to start Sean Ryan or Jordan Morgan and let that be a competition at right guard. They're moving Elgton Jenkins to center. They brought in Aaron Banks to play left guard. And we'll see what happens with Rashid Walker at left tackle. now there's arguably 7 or 8 guys who could be in competition to be starters. Mm-hmm. And I think the writing is kind of on the wall for Rashid Walker at this point, given the competition they brought in. But really, versatility and movers. I think that was kind of the theme of, you know, the pressers that they had after they made these picks was, we are tired of our guys getting walked backwards by the rest of the defensive lines in the NFC North. And now we would like to be the people movers. So we're going to take the 6'6" guys that will move you instead.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. Number one, you mentioned Rashid Walker. The Packers essentially have Rashid Walker, Romeo Doubs, and Christian Watson coming into this year knowing they're not getting re-signed at the end of the year, like already in April. And so that's going to be an interesting dynamic. But I think, you know, you're going to have a true competition. Can Jordan Morgan win the left tackle job? And then that gives you such an, like, unbelievable swing tackler Rashid Walker. They would be the jealousy of the entire league to have a backup like that. But then you have, you know, Banks, Jenkins, and then you hope Anthony Belton wins that spot. But if not, you have a pretty good alternative there anyways in Sean Ryan, and then you know what Zach Tom is. And so, like, it's exciting to have a solidified offense line. It's not sexy, but no. It's exactly what you're hoping for out of this team.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's you've seen like the best teams in the league, whether that's the Eagles, hate to say Lions after saying that, but like these teams like have really, really good offensive lines. And I think that you said it's not sexy, but the best teams continue to win because they have protection up front. And think back to the Elton Jenkins pick. I don't know that maybe it was as maybe unliked as the Belton pick initially, but I think a lot of people wanted players like AJ Brown and some of those other players that went, and obviously great players in their own right, but like Elton Jenkins was not a sexy pick. And I don't think anybody looks back and thinks like, I wish the Packers hadn't picked Elton Jenkins. So like, you know, let's give it a couple of years. If he's plug and play at right guard even, and he's good, like no one's going to regret that pick. And like at the time, it's kind of like an eat your vegetables pick, but like it could be one that absolutely pays off for the Packers and is a reason that Jordan Love is good, a reason that the running backs are finding success. So that's what the thought process is. And it's hard to hate on that.
Yeah. Cause Sean Ryan also, I think, is a free agent next off season, right? So that's another name, you know, and you know, we'll see what the room looks like, right? Jacob Monk has historically been listed as a backup, and you're hoping he doesn't see the field now that Elton Jenkins is playing center. But Packers are, that's the one position they're never going to leave the cupboard bare at, is offensive line. So certainly interesting to kind of see the trajectory of those picks change and kind of where they're putting value. But the one thing that never changes is that they draft left tackles to play anywhere. That is something that is never going to change. I want to talk to you guys really quickly too, before we wrap this up. Isaiah Simmons, news broke today, of course, that the Packers were bringing him in on a 1-year deal. We know, you know, even though Colin Oliver is kind of a tweener, has played inside, also plays along the edge, we thought linebacker could be an investment. It sounds like the Packers are going to pick up Quay Walker's 5th-year option if they hadn't already, but they feel like he'll be on the roster long-term, same with Devontae Wyatt. So that would leave Quay Walker, Edge Cooper, then you've got Tyron Hopper, of course, from 3rd-round pick from last year, who didn't get a ton of playing time really at all on defense, more of a special teamer. Brought back Isaiah McDuffie, and then you've got like Christian Welch on the roster as a special teamer. So thoughts on Isaiah Simmons, because I had put, I think, on Blue Sky when he visited a couple weeks ago that like he's a fun chess piece for Jeff Hafley because he is kind of a tweener and I like safety linebacker hybrids, but I know that that's not everybody's cup of tea. So thoughts on him coming into the room.
I loved Isaiah Simmons, and that's not unusual. I mean, he was the 8th overall pick in the draft, but it's not super surprising to me that he didn't develop very well in Arizona, who has a history of taking really like unique styles of players that are sort of that safety linebacker hybrid and not knowing what to do with them and then seeing them have more success elsewhere. He also went in the Giants organization, which has kind of been a disaster, and like he made do. But I think at a bare minimum, you have somebody who is going to have the potential to be a very elite special teams player. Mm-hmm. If he can find a role, there would be literally no linebacker unit in the league that would be as athletic as Simmons, Edge Cooper, and Quay Walker. I mean, I don't even think it's close. And so you start to look around the league, and, you know, one of the things that Aaron Glenn did a lot with the Lions is he always wanted to play base. And so, like, can you get really athletic linebackers to stay on the field for three downs? Well, I don't think Jeff Halfley wants to do that, especially not with him having like 57 different slot cornerbacks. But, like, I do think if you have multiple linebackers that can do that, it becomes more difficult for your opposition to, like, get you out there in first down, and then you have a real heavy package. Like, they know you're in a base 4-3, and then they can throw on you. Well, we have really long, really athletic, rangy linebackers. Also with Simmons, I mean, potentially you could use him not just as a blitzer, and you already have a great one in Edge Cooper, and now, like, as an opposing quarterback who's coming. But in addition, I think Isaiah Simmons could probably line up as a true edge player. If you know that there's an advantageous matchup where you could beat somebody with pure speed or length.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that what's interesting is, like, I think some other people have talked about this. Andy Herman's talked about this a good bit, that it feels like the Packers want to be kind of positionless in the mm-hmm. secondary. And I feel like this is another one of those ads that's like, he can play linebacker, he can play safety, he can be in the slot. Like, it's just it's a weird thing. Cause, like, I think a lot of times you hear the word like tweener, and it's kind of like, we don't know what to do with that. But it seems like this defense is kind of like gathering those guys because of the flexibility that goes with that. And so he's another add there. And I just think that this is a team that, like, just recently has gotten a lot faster on both sides of the ball, and specifically on defense with the drafting of Oliver and then adding in of Isaiah Simmons. Like, there is more speed and athleticism there, and that's always a good thing. And then Andrew mentioned, like, the Cardinals and Giants, not really model organizations for developing talent. And that's not just to, like, bash on them, but the Packers, like, you try to, like, qualify this with, like, okay, this is a failed player in the league, you know, by most estimations, but you qualify that, you're like, we're not going to be able to fix that. This is who this player is. But the Packers have had success with Rasul Douglas, Devondre Campbell. There is a track record here of guys who have found a second wind in their career by coming to Green Bay. And he has the athletic tools to do it. And I think a defensive coordinator with the creativity to maybe squeeze the most out of him. And he's 26 years old. So, like, if there's a way, it's totally worth the roll of the dice. And I think it's acceptable for Packers fans to get a little excited about maybe him being a little bit more than that special teams guy. And at a floor, he's absolutely going to be a contributor there. So you got to love it.
I'll say this really quick. I was just looking this up on PFF, but Simmons had 146 special team snaps last year in New York, blocked a field goal, and overall had really good ratings on kick and punt coverage as well. And then you take a look at his defensive snaps, and, like, how they judge positions is a little strange, but you take a look. He has snaps at defensive line. Now, this is like a handful of snaps throughout the season. But in the box, he has a ton of snaps at slot corner. And how they define that typically is probably more like a free safety coming down. But he can do that, right? He can match up with the tight ends, probably any tight end in the league. He has a few snaps at wide corner. Let's probably not do that. But hey, Preston Smith replacement, I guess. And then a handful at free safety as well. So if you want to get in, like, a really heavy, like, hey, it's fourth and one from midfield, or it's goal line, you play Simmons at safety and then just walk your other three linebackers out there, and you're essentially getting a heavy set, but you have a player that's capable of dropping back deep if he has to.
Yeah, I like your comments about, you know, the being positionless almost. It really feels like that's kind of where the Packers are taking this. And Isaiah Simmons is huge, right? He's like 6'4", 240, I think, or 238, something like that. He's taller than Oliver, maybe a little bit slighter, but it's certainly, you know, we saw it kind of happen with the way that Jeff Halfley deployed his secondary, right? Sometimes it was Javon Bullard kind of ended up being the guy in the slot, but we don't know if that's where they want him to fit long term, unless that's like a sub package thing. Evan Williams kind of took over opposite Xavier McKinney, but we again don't know what that's going to look like. I think the league, from the reports that we've seen, really thinks that Nate Hobbs is going to be the slot in Green Bay, given the way that they paid him. But the Packers are adamant that he's going to be a boundary corner. So I think just this idea that the Packers are going to have all these chess pieces, you know, I think some fans get a little freaked out by that. I'm sure we've talked about it before. The idea that if you're not, you know, great at one thing, you know, does it really matter if you're okay-ish good at a lot of things? Like, maybe you want guys to just be in their best positions at all time, but that's not how this works. You know, we saw Keyshawn Nixon, we thought he was kind of destined to be Green Bay slot, and then he ended up playing better on the boundary when he was forced into that starting role when Jair got hurt. So really interested to see kind of where this evolves and where they view Isaiah Simmons and his best fit, if they think he has one at all. But thank you guys so much for joining me. I want to give you the floor to wrap things up if you have any final thoughts. And please, please, please plug the Draft Fellows as much as possible.
Yeah, so we're taking a little bit of a hiatus on the Draft Fellows. But if you want to catch up, we will be back in a couple months. And you can find us on YouTube. We also have the Draft Fellows on all of the social media platforms as well. But you can check out some of the stuff we did already. But I would get really excited about some of the stuff that is coming up as we start to get into draft reviews. And then before we know it, we're going to be previewing the 2026 draft. So if you like to nerd out about draft stuff year round, that's what we love. And so we would love to have you join us over on YouTube, or you can subscribe on your favorite audio platform.
Absolutely. The reason we're taking a hiatus is because Andrew's not committed to the show. Sure. But no, he's out of the country for a hot minute. And so we're going to take a pause, but we will be back. We'll probably work our way through all of the picks that have happened in 2025 and then lean into how they're actually hitting the field, how that's going in the fall, and then start, like you said, working into 2026 stuff. So come find us. We'd love to have you along for the journey, but it's really fun to continue this relationship with Maggie and Pax, what she said, and be a part of what she's doing here as well. So thanks for having us on the show today, Maggie.
Yeah, it was a ton of fun. And thank you guys for filling in. Perry is traveling. Perry's always traveling during the draft. She has said as much. So next year, when you're trying to figure out when the draft will be, ask Perry when she's going on vacation. And that's when the draft will be. She's really good at figuring it out. I'm probably going to start maternity leave here from PAX, what she said, hey, in the next week or so. So I'm sure Perry will have some good stuff coming. And if not, PAX, what she said, will be back after a brief hiatus as well. So PAX, what she said, and the Draft Fellows going on a much needed vacation for two very different reasons. But thank you guys so much. Remember, you can follow the show at PWSS Podcast and at PAX What She Said on YouTube, Spotify, everywhere you find your favorite podcasts. Please like and subscribe to the show if you don't already. And please make sure you check out the Draft Fellows. This was a ton of fun, and I'm glad that our time may have ended on Pack a Day, but it is not the end of all the great football discussions that we get to have. So thank you, as always, for listening, and go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.